The executive summary of where we were last week. So we started by setting out a theory of Midrash and rabbinic reading in general as reading entire stories as opposed to reading details. And therefore one should be cautious when evaluating rabbinic reading not to limit it to the specific textual peg Midrash is put on, but to reading a whole story. Moving off there, so we pointed out that it seems pretty clear that the biblical creation story is seen as a complex. Spend tremendous amount of attention on the genderedness of human beings, right? We established this particularly by pointing out that four different pairs of terms are used to refer to gender of human beings, whereas no other creature is gendered prior to the flood. We also pointed out that in addition to dealing with gender as such, the first and third creation stories spend time talking about number as well, and seem to have deliberate grammatical problems, which also break up rhyme schemes and the like, in which you shift from plural to singular and vice versa. And the argument was that has to be taken as the background for rabbinic readings of the story, that it's legitimate to see the biblical text as trying to say something important about gender, and also something important about gender is to one degree focused on the different terms, which is not going to be the issue that we're addressing, but is going to rest also on some terms, in some way on the ambiguity about number. Okay, so we started last time by doing one rabbinic text, which is Ketubot 7b. Which occurs in halachic context. The halachic context is talking about how many and which blessings one makes for the bride and groom following in the week following the wedding. There were two, there was a debate as to whether it's five or six, in our term six or seven, because they're not including the blessing over wine. The Talmud wants to know, I guess I have to share it with them, I think, unless there's a copy in the middle, so you can do that. Okay. And Deborah, you'll share with me. So Talmud records two stories, and the two stories differ as to how many blessings we make, and the issue between them appears to be dealing with two brachot that appear to be redundant. All right, the second bracha is who formed the human being, or the former of the human being, Yotzer HaAdam, and the third bracha is the same thing with an introduction. So why do we have two substantially identical brachot, or at least the second one doesn't seem to add anything that isn't in the third. So in discussing that, the Talmud has what we call a hava amina, right? An initial thought which is then rejected, and a maskana, or a conclusion. Interesting issue in Talmud generally is what the role of the initial thought which is then rejected is. Which we're not getting it right. So the initial thought that Talmud has is that there was a debate as to how many formations of the human being there were, right? Were there two or one? If you said two blessings, it's because there were two formations of the human being. If you said one blessing, it's because there's only one. And then the Talmud, absent any evidence, all right, but by fiat, declares that no, that's not true. Everyone agrees there was one formation of the human being, but the debate appears to be that everyone also agrees that there was, in addition to the single formation of the human being, God thought about forming the human being twice. Mm-hmm. And that there is a position, which turns out to be our practice, that the additional blessing is there to commemorate God's initial thought about forming the human being, even though it never actually happened. Right, so that's what we created the notion of divine fantasy or divine imagination, that the rabbis claim that it is possible for God to think of things that don't happen, and the things that God thinks of that don't happen nonetheless have significance. Okay, that's where we ended that text of Ketubot 7b.
So the thought happened once, you said, or the thought happened, and then there was the thought, and then there was the action, or did you say the thought happened twice? I think
the way I understand it is that God thought about forming human beings twice, and ended up forming human beings once. Right. So the question is whether the blessing follows the way in which God originally conceived of creating human beings, which was twice, right? Or the actual way God formed human beings, which is once.
What do you mean by twice?
I don't know what I mean by twice yet. I'm just reading the text.
Oh. Right? Why is this surprising in terms of God is always telling prophets that a prophecy was considered might do if unless there is so on. So it's God's capacity for forethought is
okay. Okay, so that's a very interesting, right? It's a very interesting analogy, right? So that God is we know that God is capable of conceiving of alternate universes, right? Because he describes hypothetical universes that may yet come to be. Well, that's an interesting argument philosophically. I imagine that rationalists could find ways of saying that God knows perfectly well that this will not be the world. He's just saying that if I were to will it.
Rational action theory.
Yeah. What is different here is that there's no external, right? In all those cases, right, there's some kind of external contingency. If human beings behave this way, then
right.
that. Right. And here.
This is a pure act of
right.
imagination.
It's purely, right, nothing external changes God's mind. Depending on how you view angels. Right? Because in some versions it may be that the angels change God's mind, although not in this issue, so far as we know.
But that would be Midrash.
Yes, the text doesn't... all this is Midrash.
Yes.
Right? Although dealing with real textual issues, right? I started last time pointing out that Rashi claims that the whole first creation story, if my reading is correct, is imagination, mm-hmm. and that's the solution to the divine name problem. Okay, yes, Sam?
Before we leave Wikipedia, so there's two formats, and last week you tied that to justice and justice and mercy.
I didn't. What I pointed out was it was a reversal of the first divine fantasy that we discussed is that Rashi, which says that that God intended to create the world. God imagined creating a world of justice, saw that it would not survive, and so he joined mercy to it. Right. So I said if you wanted to match the creation of gender to the creation of that, we would expect that God intended to create one human being, the masculine. Right, saw that the masculine world could not survive, and so he created the feminine to go along with it. Right, we would parallel masculine injustice and femininity and mercy. But as opposed to there, where we say that God intended to create a world with a single attribute, changed his mind and created it with a double. Here we have God intended a double, two creations, changed his mind and created one. So the numbers go in reverse, not necessarily on the same axis. Right, that's all I just pointed out. There was a beautiful chance for parallelism, which the rabbis didn't take.
Which would
yeah.
be now.
Right.
Right. Contrasting
right. But they don't do it.
Contrast.
They don't do it, even though right, it's got to be part of the same tradition,
mm-hmm.
And we don't know why.
So there's no discussion of God's thought being imperfect as it comes out. Is that an issue?
Yeah, on the whole, Midrash, there's a magic word I'm always fond of. It's called kibiyachol, as if it were possible. That's when you say when you're about to speculate about God. So I tell you, don't take me too seriously, but we'll go on and do it. right, I think that it's a commonplace that you can't read the biblical text without treating God as a character with emotions. Right, you can deal philosophically with how you want to address that, but the fact is the text treats God as a character. Jack Miles, I haven't read his book, right? But right, the biography of God. You can do it, right? Based on the text, right? You have to change the text, and it might be legitimate philosophically to do it, but you're reading against the text when you treat God as emotionless and unchanging. And that's against the grain of the text. Okay, that's where we left last week. So what we're going to do today is a text on Brachot 61a. Which, as opposed to the text we did last week, in which this discussion occurs as an apparent background to a halachic discussion, here we're explicitly setting out to do biblical interpretation. So we're focusing on the phrase "Vayiven Elokim et Hatzela." Okay, so situating us in the narrative, God. Brings all other animals to Adam. Adam does not find a mate. We'll leave it at that. We don't know exactly what it means. So God puts Adam into some kind of stupor, and removes a portion of his body called Atzela. We're not really sure what Atzela is, right? In the same right, because we're Westernized rabbis, you probably think of Atzela as a rib, in the way that you think of the fruit of the tree of knowledge as an apple. Right, just the fruit of the tree of knowledge, as so far as I know, in classic rabbinic literature, is never an apple. There are a lot of things it can be. It can be wheat, it can be figs, it can be wine, but I think it can be carobs too, I'm not sure, right? But apples, I don't think, show up.
Apples show up in
agriculture. Show up in Song of Songs. Right, that you arouse me underneath. You arouse me underneath the apple tree, and they are a common trope in Kabbalistic thought, but I'm not aware of it in Midrash as relating to the tree of knowledge. It's not clear what their symbolism would be. They have symbolism in Greek mythology, of course, right? The golden apples of Hesperides. Assuming those are really apples, I don't know any Greek.
Where does the translation apple come from?
I don't know where apple comes from. I really don't know.
You mean
why it is that we think the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil is an apple in Western culture. I don't know where apple first came from. Kugel must have something on this.
My father. For me.
And so rib is a not implausible translation based on comparisons to shipbuilding, I think. I think ships also have tzalot. But we'll see that the standard rabbinic reading does not consider rib as one of the possibilities. It seems it's not. Rib is a very plausible literal translation, but it happens not to be in the rabbinic tradition one of the two options that are basically suggested.
It's human anatomy too. Is there a difference in
There's a. Or is it not supposed to be? It's Aristotle, isn't it? Isn't Aristotle's claim?
As far as I know, everybody's got an even number of ribs.
So there is a missing
rib.
To
the best of my knowledge.
You know,
I don't think so.
Here, what I know about, you know, about anatomy comes from Talmud.
Let's be very careful here.
Yes.
I don't want you operating on me.
I just use our spontaneously generated...
yeah.
Okay. Great. So, right, so Vayivan Elokim et Atzela. So we're going to, for now, translate Vayivan as "and God built." Right, which is probably the most likely literal translation, although one cannot resist the temptation if one is a midrashist to translate it in some form of knowledge as opposed, right, in addition to building, right, because... Well, so if you follow Rabbi Samson Rachel Hirsch's belief in two-letter roots, so to build and to understand are going to be the same root, modern grammarians tend to be very unhappy with the notion of two-letter roots. So what I'm just going to say is there's a word here which a midrashist could not resist relating to both construction and knowledge. So God builds this tzela. So we have a dispute between Rav and Shmuel. So one should be aware that one of the forms of Talmudic recollection is to record the names of the people arguing and what they argued about, but not necessarily remembering who said what. This seems to me, this is actually supposed to be part of my doctorate, to be probably a result of a particular form of memorization, because it takes place, the vast majority of the examples are all from the first generation of the Talmud. It doesn't occur with Tanaitic material, or with prior to the Talmudic era. It doesn't occur after the first generation, except for very rare cases, and probably they had a way, they had a system for remembering things, and they forgot the key as to which came first. Or else there was something, it just wasn't a great form, and it led to this kind of error. So Rav and Samuel, right, it could also be, right, this is, you know, sort of humorous, it could be that, it was, we'll see, that they needed to prevent their wives from finding out who said what.
Didn't you also have people repeating the Beit HaMidrash, so they had yellers? Rabbis would mumble, and then people would yell out.
Yeah, there's that too.
Well, they were professional memorizers.
Yes.
There were people who were
walking
books.
You had memorizer error.
Right.
Yeah, and this is a particular kind of error that occurs. So the question is, what is Atzela? So one of them said that Atzela is a partsuf, which I assume is the Greek word, which is usually translated as something resembling face. All right, I translate it as countenance because face seems a little inadequate to the right, because we have the word panim if we wanted to say face. Partsuf, yeah, a countenance seems to be the best I can do, is some kind of notion of face that conveys personality. Whereas the other one said tail. Okay, right, so we have... Right, so we have
from top to bottom.
Are these front and back or top and bottom?
I don't know. Right, all we know is that God removes something from Adam and builds it into Eve, and that something that was removed from him was either a countenance or a tail. Now that raises the question: so what did Adam look like?
Beforehand.
And we're going to discuss that as we go on. Right, obviously the tail has the advantage of explaining why human beings don't have tails. Whereas it's not clear what an anatomical result would occur as a result of having a face removed.
You wouldn't look as pretty as when you started.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know exactly.
It was your two-faced figure.
Yeah, there was...
Even doing you a huge favor to offer you anything.
If you had four faces like an angel, then you still got three left.
That's true. Yeah. I don't know. My vision of two heads always comes from an old Odd... Well, it's an old Odd Couple episode. In which I think Billie Jean King comes to play ping pong. Bobby Riggs. Bobby Riggs comes to play ping pong with Oscar, and Oscar bets the apartment with him, and he's trying to distract him. So he shows up wearing another head on his wearing another head on his shoulder. I think they played the right, and wearing a Billie Jean. He wears another head on his shoulder and a Billie Jean King poster over his body in an attempt to distract him. He walks in and says, "Oh, the old two-headed trick with the Billie Jean King poster." And proceeds to wipe the floor with him, win the apartment, and they're about to move out when Billie Jean King herself shows up and destroys him and gets the apartment back.
Which he then returns to Oscar.
Yes, which he then returns.
Quality of mercy is
for yeah, him. Absolutely. Okay, so what we have following this, right, one of them says a countenance, one of them says a tail, is a discussion which follows a fairly standard halachic form, but in this case is applied in a non-halachic context, which is to challenge, right, to challenge one or another of the possibilities to explain a series of texts. Right, normally in a halachic context, the challenge is to explain Tanaitic texts, right, in this context, the challenge is to explain biblical texts. So we're going to start throwing a whole series of texts at people and ask you, right, and say, according to you, how would you explain this? Right, he can explain it, but how do you explain it? All right, so the first text, which I apologize if I did it, there's a translation error, and instead of before and after, it should be after and before. It's a terrible slip, and when you realize after, right, before and after, is a less puzzling statement than after and before, right? Because the reason I slipped is because if you ask people to arrange the words before and after, right, they'll say before and after, right? After and before, that doesn't follow any kind of sequence. So we have a text in Psalms which said, right, in which David says to God, "You have right after and before you have formed me." And move it. Second translation I blew. It should also be instead of "You created," it should be "You have formed me," or "You formed me." I apologize. I don't know what I was thinking when I did this.
So the formed being we saw last week instead of created.
Yeah, right. That they're right. The verb for the coming into being of human beings is created in the first and third stories and formed in the second story. So David says, "Achor v'kedem itzartani, tzartani." Right, you have formed me after and before, or back and front, if you want.
So, before and aft, sort of.
Yes, for, well, aft and fore.
Aft and
fore. So, Talmud says, according to the one who said countenance, we understand this verse. But, or according to the one who said tail, what is meant by this? So, somebody try and tell me, right, what does the verse mean that makes sense if we're talking about a face, but it doesn't make sense if we're talking about a tail? Yes,
the two faces story, like the one...
Yeah. Okay, if we put it literarily, we say front and back, so we're setting up a parallelism between the front and back, right?
You
right?
Left and before spatial, as opposed to temporal.
And it has to be right, and it has to be Right, and presumably that means that there's a front and a back which match in some way, whereas a face and a tail, right, you know, you might as well say you created me left and right, you created me one third, you know, bottom third and right and top two thirds, whatever it may be, it doesn't make any sense. So there is probably the reading the text is saying that there's something that is the same front and back. Well, faces are the same front and back. But to say that it's a tail, there was no front tail. All right, so what is that, right? Yes, so there must have, right, but presumably we don't want to identify ourselves with the tail. I mean, I suppose one could be Freudian, but I'd rather not go there. So the argument seems to be that the text, which says that something has to have been the same about the front and the back, right, and right, that when you formed me, I was the same front and back. Now I'm not because you removed part of it. But what do I mean by tail? So the answer is that we accord with Rabbi Ami, and Rabbi Ami makes it, as Aline said, temporal. You formed me after something, and before right after something happened in time, and before something else happened in time. Okay, so now we want to figure out, what do we mean by after, and what do we mean by before? So Rabbi Ami said that after means after the creation, capitalized, right? Whereas before, right, is before, the Hebrew word here is pur anut. Pur anut conventionally means disaster, but in the best literal translation would be payback. Okay, lifroa is
to back.
Right. Lifroa is to repay a loan. So pur anut, right? I think retribution is the best translation, right? Because it's right. It's payback. Okay, so that's an interesting claim. We don't know what Rabbi Ami meant by that. It gives you have a fairly wide scope when somebody says after creation and before. All right.
I still don't get the connection between that interpretation.
No, we've gotten rid of tails. What we're claiming is that this verse has nothing to do with anatomy anymore, so it's no problem for the person who said tail. It's just irrelevant. But the person is.
If you take head as the explanation
of
face,
then
they're claiming that you can find some physical correlation with the body that would refer, that expression would refer to. I still don't understand why, particularly for the face, but not for the tail.
Right.
But they're saying that you don't even have to think about the anatomy if it's the tail, because you could interpret it in a temporal way. Is that because the word tail would have a temporal meaning?
No. So let's
try to explain that the verse doesn't make sense. So they're saying it's not anatomy,
right.
It's time.
Right. Because the tail doesn't make sense.
Right.
Doesn't mean physical.
There's no way before and after can refer to tails.
So forget about the tail. Forget about the head.
The tail guy's forced. If it's
the tail guy has to say that this verse is not addressing anatomy.
It's not about me.
Right. Whereas the face person says, you know what, this verse makes perfect sense to me. It's talking about anatomy. Human beings were created, right, with faces both front and back.
So we still have to keep that in consideration.
Yeah, that's fine.
So
right,
they're still arguing about the word sela, but now they're...
Not the word sela. The word sela is about anatomy. There's another verse that we thought would prove... There's another verse about that we thought would prove that it had to be face. Because it talks about because it talks about the creation of human beings as being two-sided, right? And that only makes sense if you said face. We said no, that verse has nothing to do with anything. When it says after and before, it's talking about time, and not talking about. Okay, so now yes, Deborah.
Doesn't achor l'maaseh b'reishit mean it was last? Kadam l'pran, it means it was first fruit.
Well, right now we're assuming it means after and then before. We're going to find it. Right, we're going to retranslate that in a moment. To mean last and first.
So we've gone from discussion of Tzela to David to temporal. David has brought us into a whole lot of sense now.
Well, if we're thinking in the structure of the Talmud,
right.
All we are now is trying to see if we can establish the superiority of one of the positions as to the meaning of Tzela on the basis of other biblical texts.
But David has brought us away from Tzela into temporal.
Yeah, but not about... David may or may not be relevant to our discussion. We're only interested in whether or not he's relevant to our discussion.
He seems to be a contradiction to one.
Right.
The reason we're temporal is because of David's statement. That's
right.
All I'm
saying.
Okay.
So we have a whole So we're trying to. So we say that what is a human being? Right. What does that mean? Human beings were formed after creation. Well, human beings are formed on Friday. Right. So that's easy. Right. right, the world happened, and then human beings happened 6 days later. We're fine with that. But before what?
Before
the
fall.
Right, so we say, actually, maybe Deborah's right. Mm. I'm trying to think. Maybe Deborah's right.
Deborah's always right.
Maybe Deborah's right.
Not yet.
Right, Deborah wants to suggest, and maybe she's, it seems like I was really sloppy with the whole first paragraph of translation, that would, right, that what Ahura means last in creation, and first in, it should be not after creation and before retribution, but last in creation and first in retribution.
Last in creation and first in retribution?
Yeah.
That's totally different.
Yeah, that might be, I think that's probably a better translation, thank you. Why was I sloppy? I apologize.
So why is it for?
This is the Kenegdo part. I must not have been Zochet. But that was right, the inside joke that the Rashi says, right, the biblical verse about, right, as that God says he'll make for Adam an Ezer Kenegdo, right, a helpmeet opposite him, and right, everyone tries to figure out what it means to be a helper and opposite. Right, so Rashi says if he merits a helper, and if he doesn't merit, then it's an opposite. So at my own Sheva Brachot, I got up and gave a speech about how Kenegdo doesn't really mean opposite, it can also mean equal. Right, we talk about things are Kenegid. Yeah, well, it means equal weight, right? Kenegid means that they balance out in the scales. Right, so it's a helper, or a helper and equal, and one of my cousins got up and said, if he merits, it's a help, right? Mm-hmm. Is it Azer? If he doesn't merit, it's Kenegdo, right?
Etiquette. And
we're still on speaking terms with this cousin, so we are. okay, so let's translate it that way, right? Last in creation and first in retribution. So we say last in creation, so human beings are the last thing created in the first chapter, right? Depending on whether or not you count rest. So this might run into trouble with other rabbinic texts, which we'll discuss hopefully in the series, because the rabbis have this whole series of things that are created.
Well, the whale that swallowed Jonah, for example, was
yes.
created.
Right, Twilight on Friday, which after human beings. But this text seems, right now we seem to be dealing with the text as such. But what do we mean first in retribution? Because if we're talking about the punishment for eating the tree of knowledge of good and evil, which is referred to as the retribution of the snake. So we learned in a rabbinic text that Rabbi Judah the Prince said, Rabbi said, that actually when we're giving honors, we start with the greatest, and when we're cursing, we begin with the least. Right? And the evidence is that when the snake was cursed first. And so human beings were not in fact first in the retribution of the snake, they were last. Which, in fact, and it's not clear why we need to quote a rabbinic text for this, because that's the way the biblical text records it. God talks to the snake first. Does he? Yeah, he talks to the snake first. So why we need a rabbinic text to tell us an explicit biblical text, I don't know. So rather, it's talking about the retribution of the flood, in which, right, Scripture says that God blotted out everything standing on the face of the ground, from human beings until animals. Okay, so it's an interesting interesting vision of what first and last human beings are. Human beings are last in creation, and the first, right, if you think of the first history of creation as going from creation to flood, right, it's a very reasonable way of conceiving of the story, right, that the world starts over again with Noah. Byron Sherwin has this fun essay called The Portrait of God as a Young Artist. you paint the first canvas, you rip it up, doesn't work, you start over again. So human beings are the last ones in and the first ones out. Right, that's our image. The short unhappy life of human beings. Okay. But now at least we have, right, this may or may not eventually tie in, an ongoing methodological issue as to whether one should treat Talmudic tangents as just tangents and really just look at the argument that way, or whether you can think of it as a sort of collage. There are things that have to be brought in, and the game is to try and find a way to work in all the ideas and sources that you want in a text that looks that, right, that looks like it's structured logically. It's more fun to assume that everything is relevant, even if it looks tangential, but I don't know if there's a proof yet. Okay. So then we have a second proof, which is that when it talks about God forming the human being, it uses a peculiar grammatical formulation, vayitzer, which has the letter yud twice. So there again, right, we assume that a doubling of identical letters means that human beings must have been created with a pair of something. And so that makes sense if you say that human beings originally had two faces. But if human beings originally had one face and a tail, so what does that mean? All right, so there again, the strategy is going to be to remove that text from immediate circulation and say it's not talking about anatomy at all. So in this case, we claim it's dealing with a statement of Rabbi Avohu, right? Because Rabbi Avohu said that the two yuds are there to tell me oili mi yutzri, oili mi yutzri, right? That one has to one is continually under competing pressures from God and the evil inclination, right? And those are the paragraph which. The line which begins in accord with Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi.
Woe to me.
Right, Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi said, woe to me from my former, woe to me from my evil inclination.
You said Rabbi Avohu.
I said Rabbi Avohu, sorry, I skipped, my fault. Okay, Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi, my fault, okay. I skipped the line, I apologize. So here again we have a parallelism, right? And the resolution is that there is a parallelism in the human being, there is a duality, but the duality doesn't refer to anatomy, duality refers to nature. Right, that human beings are created with competing pulls, right? And you either have to anger God or you have to anger your evil inclination. And there's an image that I always, this photo, I've been assigning this extra credit to my students for years for visual thinkers, just to try and convey one possible power of this image. It goes down as one of the best things I ever learned on a date years ago. Which is as an image when Ben Azai is after the four who enter paradise, so Ben Zoma is the one who goes nuts. So in his he has visions before he dies, and right, there's a story that his friends are walking by him and he ignores them, and then afterwards they come back and ask him, what were you looking at? And he says, I was doing a particular verb called safa between the upper and the lower waters, right, which are separated on the second day of creation. And there's only in between them one finger width. So what was he doing between them? So he says, right, Safa Hayiti. So I had always translated Safa Hayiti as I was looking, right, between the upper and lower waters, and there's only a finger width.
It's so fair. Yeah.
But so it was pointed out to me by someone on a date that probably, naively, I just asked her to translate it, that the proper translation probably was floating. Right, which
floating?
Is floating. Floating. Which is a much cooler image. And I always thought that I always want, you know, somebody to try and convey this visually. The difference, because we conceive of, right, being caught between two gravitational poles, you're not floating, right? You're in a dynamic equilibrium. But floating means, right, in order to float, there has to be, right, they actually have to be pulled in both directions, and the pulls can't cancel each other out. Right, you have to be simultaneously pulled in both directions. Right, because floating means that there's pressure down, and what keeps you up is surface tension, not the pressure, not a force going up. So I always wondered if somebody could try and convey visually that idea of simultaneously floating between, right, on two bodies of water, as opposed to being suspended, right, where two bodies of water happen to be. Okay, so here I'm not sure. Here it may simply be that you're suspended between two poles, as opposed to floating. But I always love getting that image in. And so if you know any artists, you know, or if you are artists, and that inspires you, I just thought it would be a tremendous challenge to try and convey somebody simultaneously floating on two bodies of water.
It's like a
gestalt. You could do it in gestalt. Yeah, that's interesting. If you did it that way,
you have to float on your side, obviously.
Assuming gravity. That image.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought of that. Like God's face hovers. Interesting. I don't know. Could be. Okay. Okay, and all this gets us to right to the parallel to last week, which is now we have say, right now we have a claim that we understand what, that according to the person, right now the paragraph beginning, according to the who said countenance, we understand by scripture, right, male and female, he created them. But, according to the one who said tail, what is the meaning of male and female, he created them?
Wait, excuse me, could I understand the first part of that?
Yeah.
Let's say it is countenance.
Yeah.
How do we understand?
Okay, good. Right. So now let's understand this. How do we understand this? Or why does we have a claim that the verse "male and female he created them" makes sense if the tzela is a face, and does not make sense if the tzela is a tail? Why?
Fronts of gender and backs are mostly similar.
Because fronts of gender and backs are mostly similar.
Maybe okay. We're conceiving of a human being either with two backs or with two fronts. Two backs would mostly not have genitalia, and two fronts would have both.
That's so exciting.
There was Adam's face and Eve's face.
Yeah. So you might claim...
It takes one of the faces.
What is Vayotzer?
Vayotzer.
Read it. Vayotzer.
And Vayotzer means...
He formed. He formed. Right? They're both formed. So it could be that the claim, if God created them male and female, has to mean that God created two full human personalities. Right, that's the presumption.
And countenance is equivalent in this case.
And a countenance is equivalent to a personality.
Well, why can't it be two?
Okay, or two faces.
One face.
Can it be two heads?
And then he fashioned for two heads.
Right, but you know why can't you say, you know, a male head and a female tail, right? So again, it works on the assumption there has to be some parallelism between the when we say male and female he created them. It means that the male and female have to be created in the same way.
Right. So the faces, it works.
So the face, it works because we understand that, right? We understand what it means for a human being to be created male. So we say he created them male and female, right? If the human being was created male, he must have been created female in the same way. And that makes sense if you talk about a face. If you talk about a tail, so a face and a tail, and that's what male and female means? Right, that doesn't seem. Right, that doesn't seem.
Well, I'm sorry. Right. Why would I thought that face would be that they both have faces, but one said tail. Whoever said tail is not concerned with the face.
Right. So the question is, if you think that originally there was a human being with a face and a tail,
right,
and then God took the tail and formed it into a human being, but we're making the claim that even before that formation, right, there was a time before the episode that occurs with the removal of the tzela.
Yeah.
Right, we're making the claim that there was even before that we could describe the human being as having been created male and female.
Because that preceded in the text,
yes,
the story of the removal of the tzela.
Right. Or because we just have a statement, he created them male and female, and that seems to be simultaneous. Right, so somehow it has to be true that males and females were created simultaneously. The only solution for that is to create them together. Okay, we're still not...
I'm confused, because that holds for the face as well.
So, okay, so let's...
Because one, you seem to be shifting temporally with a face, two personalities, and saying simultaneous, I'm confused.
So let's structure it again. We have two claims about the creation of human beings in the biblical text. One is repeated twice, is that God created males and females as if they were created simultaneously and identically. A second narrative tells us that once upon a time there was an Adam, and then God removed the tzela and created a Chava from that. And now we want to find
Genesis
a way...
Genesis 2.
Yeah, that's Genesis 2. We want to find a way to make both those stories true.
That's the problem that this
yes.
language...
Okay. Right. So now the solution that we say is, well, one solution is to say that God created an Adam with two faces, right? Then he took one of that, right? Then what he did was he bifurcated, right? And he bifurcated an androgynous being.
Good.
Okay? The other solution, right? But we have another person who claims that God did not bifurcate an androgynous being. There was a male with a tail. And then he took the tail and built that tail into another human being. So in that reading, how do we explain the claim that God created male and female simultaneously? Right? So it seems inexplicable. We have a problem. Okay, so
there's also the problem of, it says you took one of his salot, right?
Yeah, it does say it took one of his salot.
So that would imply that if it was tail, he had to have two of them.
True. That's a good point.
Well, why couldn't you imagine two tails if you can imagine two faces?
Yeah.
Well,
why can't a tail be a vertebra?
He only took one.
In
well,
which case,
that's why rib makes sense.
Well, but the tail, what you lose when you lose a tail is about the bottom of your spine.
Okay.
So,
okay. That could be. I agree that it seems a problem.
But I still don't understand. Maybe I was supposed to understand this a half an hour ago.
Is this one of them?
Why it can't? Why the creature couldn't have been born with two tails and was split?
Okay, we could say the creature was born with two tails and was split. The question is, would we describe? Is the tail sufficient to describe it as? Right? Do you say describe a creature with two tails and one of the tails is female, one of the tails is male, as male and female?
But maybe the two tails don't describe, a double tail doesn't describe it as a face that you recognize.
Yeah.
The tail doesn't quite convey that.
That's what I would think, that doesn't work. Now, Deborah suggested last, it wasn't here, right, that actually we should treat, we should treat tail as a euphemism for genitalia.
Well, I was going to suggest
that.
I actually suggested we were dealing with a complete set of Siamese twins. In one case it shared two tops, in the other case, and shared a bottom, in the other case it shared a top and had two bottoms.
And I would agree that this is one of the questions when the Talmud creates something and says this is impossible and we can think of a perfectly possible way of doing it. So you have to wonder, right, why is it, you know, is it deliberate or is it not? Right, I think we did a text 2-3 years ago in this group where I argued that the whole, right, the entire Talmudic sugya is structured around ignoring the elephant in the room. All right, where it said, you know, there's a where it claims, oh, there's no way on earth you could read this out of the biblical text. When if you know the rabbinic tradition, you know that there are two, right, that all rabbinic traditions actually have a way of reading it, and it's just you know, it just doesn't want you to know that because it can't get where it wants to go if you would ever think of that. So it's hoping, you know, I hope he doesn't think of that. I don't know. So you're right that that you know, particularly if we read it as genitalia, we could perfectly well say, yeah, God created a literally, you know, a physically androgynous human being, and then he split it and put a face on, right, and put a face on the female genitalia. And that would be fine, but they don't suggest that. And it's interesting why they don't.
Okay, so what they're saying is there's something about faces that is different for man and female, but there isn't something about the tail that's different.
Well, they don't want to get into it.
Or that's significant enough.
Yeah.
Or they don't want to get into that, and you just accept the fact they're saying so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay, for whatever reason they read, the reason that they're not... Okay, so then we get to the issue that the parallel to our text. We say, so if you say that human beings were... that the tzela is a tail, so then we have to explain this verse the way Rabbi Avoh did. And we get back to our fantasy. Right, we say that the meaning of this of the verse, male and female, he created them, is that, right, is that that's not actually what happened. It's what God intended to have happen. Right, so in truth, what really happened is that the human being was created with a face and a tail, and God took the tail and built it into a woman. But that's not what God originally meant to have happen. What God meant to have happen was to create, right, was to create an androgyne.
Say that again. This is what Rabbi was saying.
Yes. So
can you say it again?
So the way that the Talmud here is reading Rabbi Avoh, right, which is not necessarily the way it read Rabbi Avoh back in back in Ketubot, but the way it's reading Rabbi Avoh here is that when we say male and female he created them, that is not actually true, right? Because there is no way to reconcile that verse with the claim that woman was built out of a tail. So it must, what that's describing is an original divine thought. Right, God thought about, right, it arose in God's mind to create, right, to create human beings as male and female, right, the human being as male and female, and in the end, God chose to, create the human being in the way He did, which is the male and the female. At least that seems to be the most plausible. The most plausible reading of the Hebrew, right? Originally it arose in his thought to create two, and in the end only one was created.
Excuse me, but that's on the assumption that it was the tail that was used.
Yes. Okay.
When it says two there, does it mean two different ones? as female that might have been rather different from the male? Just a variation on the one?
Could be.
Is that what this is saying, or no? We don't know what it's saying.
We don't. We don't know. As of now, right, what we have are, we have the same text, Rabbi Avo, quoted in two different contexts. In the first context, that text is, right, where that text is used to say that that it arose in God's mind for there to be two formations, and in the end there was only one formation. In the second context, it says it arose in God's mind for there to be two created, and in the end only one was created. Now this may or may not be the same thing. Originally there were supposed to be two creations and two created.
But in the end, two were formed. So how does this make sense? Okay,
so I think in the claim that two were not formed simultaneously. All right, and somehow the second formation of human beings is not what arose in God's mind. It's substantively different. Maybe, so as you suggest, that we see, that originally femininity was supposed to have, you know, a radically different nature, and was eventually, right, in the end it became just a derivative nature. You can read it as you want. I don't have any content to put into it yet.
It's almost like he initially thought of being Hindu and then he made Jew.
Means that he had the yin-yang.
It's almost a Hindu yin-yang initially. And then it went into the what we think of as male and female.
Okay. So the first question I would ask, right, as a rabbinist, is do you think that, right, again, there are two different meanings assigned to this, right, to the fantasy. Right? In Ketubot, the fantasy is that there were two formations. Right? In Brachot, the fantasy is that there were two formed. Right? Now, are those the same thing? Or are they entirely different claims, right? Do we really have two different rabbinic imaginations of the imagination? But you can see them being very different things. Right? That the issue is about whether in one version, in some of the versions, the intent was to create an androgyne. The end was to create created a male, and then a female was created, not out of the male, but in the, right, really built from scratch almost. And another version, it's that originally men and women were supposed to be created simultaneously, but entirely distinct. And in the end, women are formed out of men. Yes, Vic.
Where do you see that there's a difference between?
Because we're trying to solve different problems.
Okay.
Right, in Ketubot, right? In Ketubot, there were, right, we're trying to solve the problem why there's an additional blessing. And if we look linguistically, do we have the Ketubot here? You've got it.
It's the same.
So the language is, we quote Rabbi Avohu as saying the same thing. But the introduction is different, right? There the introduction is, everybody, right, there the introduction is talking about whether there were one or two formations, and here the introduction is talking about whether human beings were formed, right, were formed with two faces or not.
It's logical. It could be the same. They could be the same.
Yeah, they could be.
There's no reason to say they're not.
Okay, so now, right, now we're also stuck with, right, you know, do we have a preference for, right, all this is only according to the person who says the human beings, right, so this imagination only occurs according to the person who said that the tail is a tail, right, if the person said the tail is a face, then there's no reason at all to imagine this.
Excuse me, there's still a problem between Genesis 1 and 5 on the one hand and Genesis 2, right?
Well, we solved it now, though. Genesis 1 and 5 are talking about what God originally thought. And Genesis 2 is talking about what God did.
I have a question.
Yeah.
With Ketubot 7b,
mm-hmm.
At the end, mm-hmm. Scripture writes male and female. Why was it not posed that perhaps God contained female?
Okay. And therefore, how would that solve the problem?
Reality is by creating the human being and female.
That's true.
So why wasn't that, why that wasn't? I read it,
yeah.
That's what I...
Well, figure out, what are you trying to resolve?
I'm trying to resolve the the contradiction between God created the human being in his image.
Faith.
Vision by Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda says...
Yehuda, Rav Yavahu, you mean?
No, well, you say Yehuda here. Oh, I don't know, Yehuda...
Oh, wait, no, Iktubot, Iktubot, yeah.
Iktubot. I don't know Yehuda.
Yeah, okay, fine. Okay, fine, Iktubot, yeah.
So, am I reading the wrong thing?
No, fine, so that's what we did last week, fine, yes.
Okay, so evidently Yehuda thought that there was a contradiction between God created the human being in his image,
mm-hmm.
one idea, and the contradictory idea made them.
No, he's solving it. He's saying that could be, but he's
solving
it. That's
posed as the contradiction.
Right, so what you want to know is...
The only way, the way he resolved it is to say actually it arose in his mind, and I, sitting here, and I would resolve it differently. God contains the duality, then...
Okay, so what you want to suggest, essentially, right, is the claim of the solution, is to say that the human being was created as an androgyne. Right? The problem is number. Right? It says God created the human being, and male
number,
and female, he created them.
Number.
Right, so that works in the Talmudic logic, that you have two options. You either claim that, right, that there's only one creation and it's of an androgyne, right, and the woman was built by dividing the androgyne, or you claim, right, or you claim that there are two different creation stories, right, and that, right, and those are the textual options, right, that we're basically given. We can either combine the stories, right, and say that, right, and say that when we said the human being was created, that included both men, both male and female, and although there's an apparent version in chapter 2 in which female are created later, that really just means separated, right? Or we can say no, there's no way of reconciling the stories. It says them, it says it, mm-hmm. right? No way to do it. So all we can do is claim that one of them, right? One of them must be imaginary. Mm-hmm. And
they come to the same conclusion, right? At the end of two. In his mind, the role was created too, but one was created. That's the bottom line. They come to the same...
Well, they come to it again. What I'm suggesting is it's not clear that they quote the same text. It's not clear they necessarily understand it in
but
the same way.
They come in different ways, but I'm... But
they can come to... The ones and twos have different objects.
Yeah.
You can imagine two created, or you can have a singation of two objects.
Both talk about, in his thoughts, initially androgyne. Is androgyne in Brahot the same as male mind in
no, that's a point that that if you follow Talmudic logic, they're actually opposed visions. Because we're saying that, right, what we say is that you only need to claim that there's an imagination if you think there weren't two faces originally. The whole notion of divine imagination is introduced according only to solve a problem for the one who thinks the original that right that women were created out of tails. But if you think there were two faces, we read it as a single story, and there's no imagination at all.
And the
so what Michal is saying is the same as the face interpretation.
Yes, right. That's all right.
Well, not really, but I see that I'm saying is. Not possible to say that there is a notion of sort of splittedness within the divine, that there's a kind of...
Okay, but eventually we still have to account for how it is...
Single.
That oh, she's right. If God can be single and double simultaneously, which perilously claims yes. certain other religions, then something which is created in God's image could likewise be single and double simultaneously.
That's what I'm saying.
That's fine, but we still have to account for the story
the
in
grammar.
Version 2.
You have to account for the
yes.
grammar.
Right, we still have to account for the story in version 2.
So the story, the version of story 2 is the process of splitting is taking the face, which is part of, which is in the essence God's image, and just sort of doubling down.
Sure, no, but all I this is actual.
But yeah. No, I think it's better than that. I think the story 2 is saying this thing we created is in God's image, but it's not actually God, and unlike God, it's capable of loneliness. So it can't be single and double simultaneously. We have to separate it and make it really double.
Well, it's fascinating that, you know, the way to solve loneliness is to split something. right, that's a fascinating claim, that you're lonely.
You're lonely with the text. I didn't make that one up. Don't blame it on me.
God is lonely, creates the universe.
That's true, but that's in a sense splitting himself. I guess that's possible. I guess
people
that's possible.
Are lonely,
we're going way off.
There's something.
It hangs, she's saying the tail, the second story hangs,
oh,
by,
hangs by the tail.
Second that tail. The tail, if it wasn't for the tail.
The tail hangs by the tail?
Oh, it's all a detail.
Yes. So is there an attachment to the tail?
The tail makes it the same, right? The tail makes the conclusion. If the tail is force, then they're the same story. Is that what you're saying? But the face is a different story.
No,
it's the other way around.
With the tail, tail necessitates the idea.
Right.
Now, the face is a perfect, adequate, and fine way to... Why does the whole... It gets us somewhere... really interesting. Gets us to this idea that something arose, cram ourselves into this very strange that we don't really need to get into. Arrive at something very interesting.
Interesting. I guess I would.
Is that the way that is that what's going on here or no?
I would think that if you read the story of Genesis 2 straight, it doesn't sound like a singular being is split. Right. That would, to me, that, you know, it arises. You know, you wouldn't have to say tail. I could say rib. Right. Let's not. Right. I could say rib. You read the story, and it sounds like God takes some organ out of the body of a male
and makes something.
And make right and builds it into a female.
But
right?
They don't want that.
But right. So that, you know. So it seems to me that that's where we start from, and then we have a problem, because how do we reconcile that with Genesis 1, which says He created male and female simultaneously, and equal? Right. That seems to me the foundational problem. Right, is we have contradictory narratives in 1 and 2,
yeah.
And we need to resolve them.
And we can't resolve them the way we
right, and we don't, right, yeah. We don't assume, I mean, in a sense, if we solve the way literary, by claiming that 1 is fantasy, right, we solve the problem in a similar, right, that we don't reconcile them into a single narrative,
right,
we do the equivalent of, all of you remember who shot JR, right?
Right, exactly.
Right, the solution is that the entire last season was a dream. Right. Nobody.
Yes.
I think it was Dallas later. It was after it was shot. Like some years later, they claimed that the entire first 9 seasons of Dallas had been a dream or something like that, and they could reconcile all the narratives and start over with all the characters. So that's what they're doing.
It's like the shattering of the vessel.
Can I ask something about Rabbi Abu's
sure.
Language is strange because he doesn't say b'tchila. He thought of this b'lisof lo bara ela achad, but from Divra, it's sort of. God wanted one thing to happen, and something else happened.
Like with the fruit.
That's true. Now there is another image. Right? There isn't there another image of, which I think is Aristotelian. You know, the notion that matter can rebel against form. When I teach medieval exegesis, so my first, when I, very early on in the year, I always teach about two-headed calves in Aristotle. Right? We say if in modern science, modern science is descriptive, so if we find a two-headed calf, that means that calves can have either one or two heads.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. But in Aristotelian science, a two-headed calf is a rebellion of matter against form. Because the calf has the form of a one-headed thing, and every once in a while, matter rebels. So you have Midrashim about that deal with apparent contradictions between what God said should be, right? God said, let there be, and then you look at what actually happened, it doesn't match it exactly.
That's what this sounds like.
Yeah, so right. So Jerry wants to argue that maybe it's not even that God thought one way and then changed His mind. It's God thought one way and somehow.
But it's a passive.
Yes.
It reminds me a little bit of Aaron explaining how it is that the golden calf got
yes.
created.
Yeah, that's very true, right? If you that the afterward, the calf just happened. So maybe God.
Yes.
Right. And maybe this is all this is all part of this whole notion of. God having this fight with the angels about the creation of human beings, so, right, human beings to sort of slip through when the angels aren't watching.
Now, is there's no inconsistency about...
No, they're not created, they're not gendered at all.
They're not gendered at all until the flood.
They're not gendered at all.
Oh.
They can reproduce, but they're not gendered.
In preparation for the flood.
Yes.
Two by two.
Right.
But they're not gendered.
Not until...
Well, not explicitly.
They're gendered
one
in,
can imagine
they're in the
that
flood.
They were, but
right, but in the creation story, they're not gendered.
They're not
but it does tell them to prove.
It tells them to multiply, sure, but that could be spontaneous generation for all we know.
You talk at all about the Lilith story is also an attempt to reconcile.
The Lilith story an attempt to reconcile the two narratives.
So that says there are two different females,
two,
and one created
females.
With him and another one created from him?
Yes, that is true, right.
That's an attempt also, that there are two women. There are two women. Lilith was the androgen, and it has a quality that doesn't work. So she goes off.
Right, but that version as a solution to the story is very late.
Yeah.
I understand, right?
Yeah.
Right. There isn't a Lilith in Midrash. midrash, right? There are just succubi, right? Liliot means women of the night.
The ones who steal.
Right, and they're succubi, and they're formed. Right.
But it is late. It's a late story.
Yeah, but so originally it's formed out of midrashic tradition that that Adam and Eve separate for 130 years after the sin, and it's not so easy for men to not engage in any sexual activity for 130 years. Right, so he must have, right.
It's an atheist living for 130 years as an adult.
The version I know is that Bar-Am, the androgen.
Yeah, but I think that's very late. That's
okay, that is late, but it is an attempt.
But it's also, you're right, it's also an attempt. Yes.
It's notable that, unless I'm missing something, the most plausible and most offensive explanation of the pasuk in the first chapter, everywhere.
Which is
that only males were created b'tzelem Elokim. Vayikra Elokim et ha'adam b'tzelem Elokim bara oto zecharu nekeva bara otam. You could very easily read that as men are the image of God and women are just things. And
work?
We don't. It would be the perfect patriarchal reading, but we don't say it. And it occurs to me that might be what we're arguing against here implicitly. We're coming up with all these absurd things in order to stop you from reading text that way.
I don't know. I think that 5:2 is right. It's a very powerful thing when it says he called their name Adam, right? So the text in 5 is really is preventing that reading.
Maybe.
But okay. I still would like to go for it, right? Hopefully, we'll get there next week as we finish the text. Is figuring out what it means, right? Why would God have wanted to create whichever way it is that God imagined? Right? Why is it that that was a reasonable way to create the world? And why didn't it happen? Right? And I have the instinct that the two traditions about divine imagination are created, and there must be some reason that the world was not sustainable in its original version. Now, maybe, one version is because equality wasn't sustainable. And that certainly, right, we have another midrash which says that, which is the midrash about the sun and the moon. Right, if you'd write that the reason, right, that you have the contradiction that it says God created the two great lights in the sky, the greater light and the lesser light. So are there two great lights, or the greater and the lesser? And the solution is that originally they were created the same, and then that wouldn't survive, so God shrank one of them. Right, and that certainly is taken to some degree as a metaphor for male and female. And so one could, right, that would be part of the same. Comparing women to the moon is not doesn't take great leaps of literary imagination. So one could try and read it that way if one wanted. I don't know. What I would say is, if we put it all together, right? And that's where we'll end this week. We have two traditions. One of which seems offhand to make us a lot happier. Right, as to how women were created. One is that women and men were basically the same, and they were split. Right, that's very congenial to modern thinking. And the other is, right, a prima facie deeply insulting. Right, that women were created out of men's tail. Right, and prima facie, that's said to insult. That's why I joked at the beginning that maybe we don't know who said what because we didn't whoever's wife, right, whoever said it, but he wouldn't want his wife to know. At the same time. The position that women were created out of the tail generates two separate consequences. One is it generates a claim that although this is the way it is, for some reason it's not the way that God thought it had to be. Or at least originally God thought of it differently. Right? Right. That's a really interesting claim. Which might find some way at the end of reintegrating and saying it in terms of what it means to create, right, to create a being out of a tail, which doesn't necessarily mean it's not a meaning, right, it's a tail being, right, it's just something about the nature, because it still has to be the same thing that's created, right, as was created originally. The other point is that it generates a ritual effect, which is that we have two blessings about the formation of human beings as opposed to one, and now, if we go back and look at the text of the blessing, so the full one, right, the one everyone agrees we say, is one which talks about the second creation story. Right, God created the male, right? And out of it, he formed an everlasting construction, naming women, mainly women. Okay, in which the Adam, right, the Adam who is formed in that blessing, is the male. Right, because of this version, right, we now have an additional blessing in which we just talk about the former of the Adam, and the Adam in that line might very well be male and female. So it turns out that liturgically the imposition of this line is actually one which recognizes, right? It's the position that says it was a tale, which is what creates the imagination, right? Which is what creates the additional blessing, which I would suggest, right, all ties together, is the blessing over human beings ungendered, right, or androgynous, as opposed to the blessing over a male who has a woman with him. And that, by the way, that distinction shows up later in the liturgy, right, where, although you don't have to read it that way, but there are two later blessings. One ends, right, God who makes the chatan happy with the kala, and one who makes the chatan and the kala happy. Right, so there again, right, you have two different visions of the way in which gender functions in there. So right now we're just throwing out questions. It would be great if people walked in next week and had really cool ideas as to why it is that God imagined it this way. We'll see next week. The text goes on to discuss, according to the position that human beings were created with two faces, well, which one went first? Right, and then discusses the notion of Edith, which seems... In which direction did it walk?
Yeah.
Right, and doesn't treat this as coming.
Which direction did it speak?
Yeah, and it also raises the possibility of it, you know, of how it handled being the possibility of erratic attraction to itself, and all sorts of issues like that, which are semi-comic.
The being got separated, and that's why there's so much sexual desire.
Yeah, Philo has it also. Yeah. Which is the rabbinic notion, right, that, you know, great, right, that rabbinic notion is that males are continually seeking their lost Selah. Right. Right? Right, and that's why right, courtship is males pursuing females as opposed to vice versa, because Thomas says the one who lost the object is going to try and find it. Right, the lost object doesn't try to find its owner.
So these are the partsuf explanations, but will we be going back to the tail theory?
Well, I think that we have is two streams. One is the partsuf, and the other is the imagination. Everybody, again, to me, the methodological point is that the rabbis never ignore the biblical texts, right? And so there's a fixed point: is that you have to have a verse which says male and female he created them, and it has to play a role. Mm-hmm. Either it's real or imagined, but it has to play a role, and every rabbinic reading is going to account for that. All right, and then right, how we deal with right, what they mean when they account for it, we don't know yet. Right, but to understand how they function, right, they're always actually genuinely, right, even what looks like the most fanciful midrash is actually the product of deep fidelity, right, to the biblical text. Right, if the biblical text contains a contradiction, then by golly, we're going to say something that contains a contradiction, because there's no other way to read the text. All right, so I guess we have another week to think about it. And hopefully we'll tie it together next week. So I'd like to bring this section to a close next week, if possible.